Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So what can be done to fix New York City's most hated mile of expressway? Well, New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer has a new solution, and he's here to explain what separates his plan from an already crowded field of proposals to renovate the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. We will also discuss why he's taking a harder look at First Lady Shirlane McRae's big mental health initiative, Thrive NYC, and his thoughts on the proposed pied-à-terre tax on very high-end second homes in the city, and maybe even more. Comptroller Stringer, welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it is good to be here.
Last week, you offered a new proposal to renovate the BQE. What's wrong with the existing one?
Look, the BQE, as presently constituted, needs major renovation and repair. So we have a real opportunity to think about how we're going to create transportation alternatives in Brooklyn that will be relevant for the next 100 years. We developed a community-based plan working with neighborhood groups that essentially would create a linear greenway park, a Brooklyn Greenway. We would move cars away from neighborhoods and also give renovation and different kinds of transportation alternatives and sort of deconstruct the Robert Moses way of thinking about development. We're a car-centric city. We develop large luxury towers through rezonings in the name of affordable housing. But we all know that that affordable housing is just not affordable for so many of our communities. So this BQE plan is the new model. We can make the renovations. We can continue to keep trucks used for manufacturing. We can get cars off the BQE by putting forth congestion pricing and other new tools. And we can build out a transportation system with dedicated bus lanes. But more importantly, it's just a new paradigm about how to think about developing in our communities by integrating transportation. If you take a superhighway and spend $4 billion creating another superhighway, well, the cars will come. But when you can deconstruct that highway, cars will not come.
Let's get specific about a few pieces of that. I had heard, tell me if this is accurate, that you have a no cars, just trucks section of the BQE in your plan?
So the third level of the cantilever needs to be repaired. We would temporarily put the trucks, it's about 9% of the traffic. We would create a two-way cantilever in the midsection. When the repairs are complete, we take the trucks, move them to the third cantilever, and here it gets exciting. We would propose green space, that a linear park that would stretch for 2 miles, incorporate neighborhoods not just in Brooklyn Heights, but Cobble Hill, Red Hook, Williamsburg, and we would do this through real comprehensive community-based planning. It would create that healthy greenway that communities cry out for. And this could be a model for other neighborhoods in the city as highways come up for repair and renovation.
But if somebody's actually trying to drive from Brooklyn to Queens on the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, do they have to get off, travel local roads for a while, and then get back on?
Well, it's important to understand where those cars are traveling today. 45% of car trips on the triple cantilever are going or coming to Brooklyn and Manhattan bridges in order to avoid tolls. So they're toll shopping. Congestion pricing implementation would basically stop that. We would push cars to the U-Carry Tunnel and the Belt Parkway, where there certainly is enough to accommodate those cars. We would push them away from communities. And quite frankly, the whole idea here is by giving real meaningful transportation alternatives, dedicated bus lanes, congestion pricing, we would see less cars coming or needing to come to the BQE. One of the things we want to preserve is the ability for trucks to continue the manufacturing aspect of job development, especially in Brooklyn. But here's what's exciting. As the cars stop coming, we can create more open space, more healthy communities, create a real environmental justice campaign that prioritizes people over cars. The car culture is strangling our communities, causing asthma and real medical hardship. Let's recognize that and stop trying to replicate the Robert Moses land use and zoning aspect of this city. Look at the Cross Bronx Expressway. Look at other large highways. We separated communities. Look what happened to Red Hook with the BQE. Red Hook is over here when the rest of the city, Brooklyn, is over here. Let's collapse that and connect communities through a park rather through a superhighway.
Is preserving the beloved Brooklyn Heights promenade with its views of Manhattan, which was threatened under the other plan, an issue for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, first of all, two options that are basically superhighways that encroach on communities is not the answer to this problem. This is a $4 billion question. I would rather have a plan that offers realistic planning and construction, but saves the money so we can invest it in the parks. We want everyone to enjoy a city that reimagines the skyline, reimagines what's possible. Right now, our planning process isn't planning. It's reactive.
Does your plan preserve the promenade from closure?
Yes.
And listeners, we can take phone calls for New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer on his plan for the BQE or other things relevant to the Comptroller's office. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's go on to another issue. Thrive NYC. This is First Lady Shirlane McRae's big mental health initiative. And on Friday, you cited a lack of transparency and announced that you would be investigating Thrive NYC in some way. What have you seen that troubles you? How are you going to be looking into it?
Well, let me just say that the mental health crisis in New York is real, which is why one of my top questions is what are we paying in consultants and what are we paying to fix things on the ground? This is a huge $850 million initiative. I praise the First Lady and the mayor for taking a look at this. But what are we getting for the $850 million? As far as I can tell, basically there's 50 programs across 20 agencies. We can only see about 20% of the $250 million spent each year in the budget. That's not good enough for me. We need to look at the entirety of the program. What does it mean for kids in the public schools who may have mental health issues, bullying issues? One of the things we have to ask ourselves, is it better to create a consultant-driven system where a kid has to call or a parent has to call to be placed with a consultant who will then refer you two or three times? Or do we want to reprioritize Thrive and invest in boots on the ground in the public school system where we need more guidance counselors or health professionals in the schools? You can't have it both ways. So I'm going to ask some very tough questions as we review this. And it's critical for our kids and for the people who suffer from mental illness to get the on-the-ground services they need. I am sure a lot of these programs are worthy, but we also have to think about it. Second, what exactly is Thrive? Right now, the city announced, or City Hall announced, that this program is going to be have offices within City Hall with a budget. I'd like to see what that looks like. For 2 years, there was no structure that we can see managing Thrive. So did Thrive actually exist while we were spending all this money? What exactly is Thrive? Who manages it on a day-to-day basis?
By the way, Ms. McRae said she welcomes your attention and added that, quote, perhaps now we can go beyond political posturing and lip service and have the kind of public conversation our city must have to promote the mental health of our children and families. Your reaction?
Oh, I didn't understand what response that was to simply asking for basic information. So she suggested that I take a mental health kit test or...
Well, she seemed to be supporting it, saying that she, you know, wants to have, kind of public conversation our city must have.
Look, as someone whose family has had individuals with mental health issues and friends of mine over the years, nothing is more important than giving people the help they need. I want to measure whether Thrive is successful, whether all those phone calls actually improve the lives of people. I'm glad she welcomes this. But let me make it clear, this isn't about being political. Being political is using a program for political benefit. I want to find out if we're having a program that actually benefits individuals it's supposed to serve. So obviously, I'm going to work closely with City Hall and the First Lady. We had a meeting. I've received a plethora of documents. We're going to ask for more documents, especially the structure The leadership of Thrive, we haven't gotten a lot of that information yet, but I'm very hopeful we'll get it soon.
And with New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer, let's talk to Janelle in Williamsburg calling about the plan for the BQE. Hi, Janelle. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. I was just listening to Mr. Stringer's ideas about the BQE, and I think the motivation is good, but it sounds completely unrealistic. I work in Williamsburg. I live in Flatbush. I moved there intending to take public transportation to work every day until it took me 3.5 hours commuting one day to my self-employment. And it's just completely unsustainable. So I had to buy a car so that I could get to work at all. So if the BQE closes, I don't even know how I could work anymore. I mean, I would have to move just to be able to work.
Well, we're not closing the BQE. We're repairing the BQE. We're creating transportation alternatives from...
But if you restrict traffic at all, would be complete catastrophe.
Well, we don't think so. Once we inject congestion pricing and create a plan where cars can use other transportational alternatives like the Belt, like the U-Carry Tunnel, we think
but
that...
But, for example, going from Flatbush from South mm-hmm. Brooklyn to North Brooklyn, the Belt Parkway or the U-Carry Tunnel is not going to fix that at all. There's only one way.
But we can also create new transportation alternatives. And one of the great parts of this plan... This is not designed. This is about us coming to Williamsburg and Cobble Hill and all communities to engage in community-based planning. And I invite you to be part of that discussion. No real plan should be top-down. It has to be bottom-up. And I look forward to working with you and our residents in Williamsburg to come up with a plan that meets your needs as well as the needs of neighbors around the city. One thing is clear. If we replace a superhighway with another superhighway, we'll have more cars and more congestion. We'll also spend billions more than we have to, and we should invest in a transportation infrastructure that's 21st century. Robert Moses had a different vision for the city, and it was very much a car culture at the expense of local neighborhoods. Why don't we smash that and start over? This is a wonderful opportunity to do that. If you see from your community in Williamsburg, overdevelopment, rising rents, lack of affordable housing, not thinking about how kids can learn in schools that are not overcrowded. This is our moment when we fundamentally have to change planning in the city. I'm calling on the City Planning Commission to work with us. I met with Polly Trottenberg, and she's now reviewing this plan. It is not the panacea. It is not a done deal. I'm going to be out in Brooklyn presenting this plan shortly. We're working with the Brooklyn Heights Association, A Better Way, Cobble Hill Association, and I want to work with people in Williamsburg.
Janelle, thank you for your call. I'm going to take one more like this, Mr. Comptroller, because the drivers are calling in, those who are making the case that they're driving along that route is not frivolous. Tim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good morning, Brian. The idea that you can take the cars off the BQE and not affect commerce in New York City, like in the borough specifically, is wrong. There, a lot of those cars are computer repair technicians, they're trunks full of tools, they're people going to, show real estate. There's a lot of commerce there, and the cars are not superfluous, and it would have a major impact on the city to just boot cars off in some sort of a misguided theoretical correction of what Robert Moses did decades ago. This would be a disaster.
Well, I don't think it's a disaster. I think we have to be open-minded.
Yes, it is.
Well, let me finish. These are legitimate issues you're raising. We do think that the status quo is not sustainable. But again, this is the kind of conversations we should be having. Let's put more options on the table.
It would also boot all of that traffic onto local streets.
No, we don't think so. We think
disastrous congestion on small, narrow local streets.
We think that when congestion pricing is implemented, when we have different transportation alternatives, dedicated bus lanes, ways to move cars onto the Belt and into the U-Carry Tunnel, when it's all said and done, we actually will see less cars on the highway. Now, this has to be studied. This is another option. There are two options currently slated, but I can tell you from a financial perspective, this is a $4 billion boondoggle that will not end well the current plan. We think we have an alternative, but by the way, I'd be the first to say, let's go to you, to people who are driving cars, and let's sit down and think it out or think through this. Let's have community meetings. Let's give our opinions. I don't disrespect your opinion. I'm sure there's merit to what you say, but the way we build our city is through listening to communities, listening to you, listening to neighborhoods that are very concerned about how they get to work, how they feed their families. All of that should be on the table. So I agree with you from that perspective.
Tim, thank you. Andrea in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Comptroller Scott Stringer. Hi, Andrea.
I want to say thank you. I love you madly. I'm so happy to finally be hearing a politician talking like Greta Thunberg does, because unless that happens, we can't go on. We must be able to breathe. In New York City, we can't, because as you say, Robert Moses created a car-centric monstrosity at the expense of human health and serenity, and it's just got to happen. And if there are cars in New York City, they should be electric. We should be building the infrastructure. I'm hoping that you can take it that step further so that we can have plug-in cars, the plug-in infrastructure, so that the cars that come into this city are mandated to be electric. Because we deserve, we in New York City, to breathe. That is the most inherent human right we have and need. So I thank you. I thank you very, very much. And I hope this catches fire like wild, and that, you know, little golf carts can carry the little people with their who used to be in cars, so that we all can, you know, coexist with each other.
And did you tell my screener you want him to do something like he's talking about with the BQE on the West Side Highway?
Yes, please implement this plan. I live at 43rd and 10th Avenue, and the traffic is so severe that I mean it's frightening. If you could do this on the West Side Highway and 11th Avenue and 12th Avenue and 10th Avenue, if you could do this everywhere,
and that's not even a highway there. That's West Street.
Well, let me tell you the good news. Since we've announced this plan and presented it. It's not just some of the Brooklyn communities who are enthusiastic, but we're hearing from people all over the city who really want to take our streets back, who want to engage in how we plan for our city. Let me be clear. Development planning in the city has gotten off course. Basically, you rezone a community, you get more density in a neighborhood. That means developers build luxury housing. There's no real affordability component in these projects. And then we never think about traffic congestion, overcrowded schools. It's time to take the planning process and give it back to the people and engage communities to confront gentrification, to confront poor decisions made a generation ago, and radically change how this city is going to look for the 21st century. I have two little kids. I talk about them all the time, 7 years and 5.5 years old. Hey, I want them to breathe and live in the city in the safest way possible. And the way to do that is to build the city, not for us, but for that next generation. And we have the opportunity through technology, through the smarts of our urban planners and our community leaders to do that.
Andrea, thank you for your call. It's a small, very unscientific sample, but we have callers from all over Brooklyn, and I'm not going to continue with them, who drive saying, no, don't do this to me. We have callers from Manhattan. We heard from Andrea. I'm not going to take another one who's waiting on the board. I'll just make his point, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you can do it to the BQE, and she said, do it on the West Side Highway too. The other caller says, can you also do it on the FDR? So do we have a Manhattan versus outer boroughs divide here?
Well, I think your sample is very unscientific. People who have concerns or a particular self-interest are going to call your show. I've been listening to it for years. But look, what I love about this discussion is people are lighting up the boards. They want to have an opinion on this. That doesn't make me upset. That encourages me to hold meetings and not select people who will attend those meetings, but come one, come all. Let's dissect this plan. Let's make it better. Let's throw away the things that we may have overlooked. We went to a better way, to the Brooklyn Heights Association, to the Cobble Hill Association, where people who work every day on behalf of their communities embrace this plan, but they also have questions about it. I think this is a better model than a top-down approach where the Department of Transportation says to a community, here are the two options, take it or leave it. I'd rather build a plan from the bottom up, and that's why we're here today, and that's why we're going to be in Brooklyn and any other community who calls me.
I want to go on to another topic, the pied-à-terre tax, which is now being discussed as one of the possible ways to fund the MTA, along with congestion pricing and taxation from legalized recreational cannabis for adults. The pied-à-terre tax for second homes that are very high end within the city. Can you explain to people how that would work and what your position is on it?
Well, we did an economic or a revenue analysis based on a bill put forth by Senator Brad Hoyleman, and we found that based on our calculations, we could realize upwards to $650 million in estimated revenue. I'll give the example of the Russian oligarch who bought an $88 million apartment for his daughter. Good for her. But out of that $88 million, that individual was only paying $150,000 in property taxes. That's 0.17 of taxes going to the city. We think that individual should be paying a little more so that the value of that apartment is valued in large part because of our the safety of our investment, the policing of the city, protecting that real estate investment. We have got to raise revenue and earmark it to our subway system and our bus system. It's the only way we're going to continue to expand to a five-borough economy.
Let me read you a critique of the pied-à-terre tax from the think tank and watchdog group, the Citizens Budget Commission. They list a number of objections, and they say, first, the property tax should be levied based on the characteristics of the property, not who owns it. Second, the pied-à-terre tax makes New York City less attractive to non-resident property owners who make important economic contributions that should not be overlooked. They bolster the state's economy. Third, the proposed tax will have a negative impact on the luxury housing market. The significant progressivity and top rate would reduce demand for high-end homes by non-residents. And while people may cheer, yeah, we don't want the oligarchs coming in from other countries buying up our property, it says this would depress property values for residents and non-residents alike, making the expected revenue from the tax overly optimistic. Your response to
any
of
that? Well, first of all, I respect the Citizens Budget Commission. They're a very important think tank in the city. And look, I do the same kind of numbers crunching. But where we have a bit of a divide here is I don't have a doomsday scenario about leveling a basic small tax on people who are buying $50 and $60 and $70 million apartments and basically getting away without paying their fair share of taxes. We need this money that will actually make those properties even more valuable, because a city with a strong subway or transportation base, a city that is safe, a city that builds park space and have new ways of thinking about transportation alternatives, that money enhances the value of those second homes when people come and visit, or in the case of the oligarch, giving a daughter a safe and beautiful city. So we part ways. Let's throw money into a fund that can rebuild our city. Part-timers should be paying their fair share, especially people worth hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. They're not parking their money anywhere but New York City, as far as I can see.
As comptroller, did you crunch the potential impact of Amazon coming with all that tax revenue that, you know, the governor and the mayor have argued would have been a huge plus? The focus was wrong on the $3 billion of tax breaks. That would have been 10% off the top of a huge amount of money, and the impact of them withdrawing the deal?
Look, I have spoken out about the Amazon deal. It was a flawed process from the beginning. You can't do a deal like this in secret. It's a $3 billion subsidy package, $1.3 billion from the city. This was announced by the mayor and others in the dead of night, triggering a legitimate response. Now, do we want to lose business like Amazon? No. But we also know what works. a transparent land use process. Now, I think the people who spoke out without thinking this through, I mean, I don't think that was a credit to the city, but if we're going to do it, we have to do it differently. And as a former borough president that ushered in a number of controversial rezonings through community-based planning, that's how you get high-tech jobs to the city. So let's move on and create a system and a transparency that works. That is how we're going to bring industry to the city so that all of our people have an opportunity to enjoy those jobs.
If you run for mayor, as many people expect you will, how would you balance respecting the communities that felt dissed through the Amazon process or potentially disadvantaged by the economics of it, but also not scare away other major corporations with a lot of jobs who may now feel, as some have alleged, that New York is now an inhospitable place for them to bring their jobs?
You know, when I was a teenager, I served on a community board. I served for 8 years as a borough president before becoming controller. I dealt a lot with land use and zoning issues, and I always start from this premise. Bring the community into the room. Open up the process. Don't be afraid of going before thousands of people and making a case. And a mayor has to roll up his or her sleeve and get to work building consensus. People legitimately react when things are done behind a community's back. Once you lose the trust of a community, then you can't get anything back. And sometimes you have to stand tall or stand tough, and other times you have to bring people to the table. Every success I've had with land use and zoning always was about the community and building from there, and that's what we have to go back to. Again, rezonings that don't benefit the community, deals made in secret, a whole way of thinking has got to be thrown out, and it's time to usher in a new generation of leaders who will think differently about land use and zoning. I'm excited about it, Brian.
Last thing, 30 seconds. You've been rallying support behind a plan to change the city charter. That's like the city's constitution, so that every city government agency would have a chief diversity officer. Why do we need that in the charter?
Give you one example. So we spend a tremendous amount of money on procurement. And only 5% of those procurement dollars go to women and minority-owned businesses. It's a shame. $20 billion in procurement and 5% go to people of color. Our chief diversity officer that will go work directly with the mayor is necessary to build out people who understand that those contracts have to create wealth in all communities. This is discrimination at its worst. How do we talk about income inequality without reforming the way we give contracts to women and minority-owned businesses? Let's put someone in charge of that.
New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer, thanks a lot.
Thank you.